Hi everyone, welcome to the Equip and Elevate podcast. This is a place where we want to help women to cultivate the courage to own their purpose, own their journeys, and own their success. I'm your host, Ayanda Vanna, and each episode, I'll be bringing you conversations with some dynamic and bold women. My goal is that through inspired conversations, you'll gain a new perspective and tools to thrive in your personal journeys, businesses, and careers. And most importantly, to live a life of purpose and passion. Thank you so much for pushing play today. And now let's begin. Welcome to another episode of Equip and Elevate. I am so excited about this episode today because this is for anyone that's in corporate. Not actually anyone in corporate. I think anyone that really wants to build their career. I have Uli Ziwer today. She is like, I was even saying, she's doing like boss babe things, guys. I think she's like 32 or something and she's like the chief of staff.
I'm 30, sweetie.
You're 30?
I'm 30.
I even gave you,
Please.
I don't know. I just gave you extra years. Because I think for me, even the closest thing that makes sense for the role you're doing right now is someone maybe in their mid-30s. She's currently the group, the chief of staff to the group CEO of a major JSE-listed financial services institution. If you guys want to stalk her, go check it out on LinkedIn. You'll know what I'm talking about. So I'm really excited.
Don't.
I'm really excited to have her today because we're going to be talking about navigating corporate as a Black professional and also tips on how you can build your career in corporate. So welcome to the Equip and Elevate podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. Like, I'm a big fan.
Yay!
And I think we were having another conversation where I was like, this is such an important space. I love what you're doing. So I'm really honored.
Thank you. Can I tell you? I don't think you know me though from Rhodes. So I went to Rhodes and I think Uli Ziwer was probably like 2 years or 3 years ahead of me. I can't remember. But she was like the BMF girl. Like she's very, like, I would say, wouldn't say important, but she's always serious, like focused. Because I remember you even went to New York and at the time I had not even met you. I don't think we even met. I just knew about you because of the work you were doing with BMF. For anyone that does not know BMF is, it's the Black Management Forum.
Yeah.
And on top of that, she went to New York. And listen, guys, in Grahamstown, it's small.
Oh, please.
People going to New York varsity was like, or for anything linked to university was big.
It was huge.
It was so
me. Going to Joburg, I was like, what? New York, please forget about it, sweetie.
So she was like one of those, and I think also when I also used to look up to a lot of women or younger ladies in varsity that were doing amazing things, and she was one of them in varsity when I first heard about her. So this is something that you don't know me telling you about.
You're gonna make me cry on this thing that you're recording. Oh my gosh, thank you. That's so kind. Thank you.
It's wild how we, I think, and also, I just wanted to say this. I was saying that, guys, also, when you are looking for people that you can sort of look up to or people you can ask to be mentors, when you're in varsity, look at people in varsity that are slightly ahead of you. I think people want, like, Basasana Kumalo, and you're 21. Guess how many people she's getting? Like, thousands of people to mentor her. So if you were slightly more braver than I was, like, if you do see, like, a Lizzie in your varsity and you are thinking, this lady's doing amazing things, I want to, you know, learn a little bit from her, reach out, because she's also in varsity navigating, but she's gone before you, which means she can share some tips. But anyway, that's a side note. That's something I should have done. But to get started, I want to find out more about your childhood. Maybe you can share us about, just who is Uli Ziwer, what are some key values that have shaped you. You can talk about your schooling, your childhood, anything that really speaks closely to you when you think about your childhood.
Sure. So I'm an Eastern Cape girl, born, bred, buttered in the Eastern Cape. I was born in a very small town called Queenstown. But then I think when I was like 7 or 8, we moved to PE, and that's kind of where I spent most of my childhood. We lost my dad when I was 3.
Sure.
So that was quite a big character shaping moment for me because he was the main breadwinner in our family, and so we went from being, you know, quite comfortable to financially insecure for like the bulk of my childhood. And my mom being a very young mother, having to raise like 3 kids on her own, was deeply challenging. And I think I observed a lot of kind of what it takes to really survive as a Black woman who hasn't had as many opportunities as I think we do. And so witnessing that and growing up in a family of predominantly like led by women, to be honest, on both sides was a big kind of component of what's shaped me and my perspective. And I think seeing her struggle, like, to make sure we went to the best schools that she could afford, to make sure, like, we had food, exposure, any opportunity that we were presented with, like, Umama would do everything in her power to make sure, like, you weren't the child of the single Black woman in the school. And I think that was really important, especially as a young Black girl navigating predominantly white spaces. That was really a big, big kind of component of what's shaped me. And I think that's why I value Black women so much. I often say on my social media, like, Black women are my ministry. Those are the people
I love that
you know, I love to speak into. I care to model what existing, living, breathing as a Black woman can look like. And I like to learn from Black women. Those are the people that inspire me the most. I think you can learn from different people, of course, but I just have a deep appreciation of what it takes to exist as a Black woman. So that's me, you know, hard work, grit, discipline.
Yeah.
All of that type of stuff is, I think, shaped me a lot. And I think it comes from being raised by my mom. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And what would you say is one of the fondest memories you can think about with your mom, where you were like, you, all this hard work, I want to imitate that in my life one day.
Yo, there's so many. I also think my mom and I are very different. Like, other people might disagree or whatever, but I'm quite reserved. My natural disposition is to be quite reserved. And the rest of my family is not. My siblings, my mother, none of them. And I remember there would be times at school where, like, I would have issues with a teacher, or like I wouldn't be happy with a certain grade, and I'd come home and my mom would, like, before she'd go and work a night shift, she'd come to like a parent-teacher conference and be like, this is not okay, Mrs. So-and-so, like, what's going on? You know, why is my child not, like, she's working, I can see she's studying, what's going on with these marks? And those are the, like, that's probably one of my favorite memories of her, like, dragging all of my teachers, like, at parent-teacher conferences and, like, being the only Black mom in the space. Yeah, and I think also just a lot of the things I've been able to do for her financially since I've been able to work, have been probably, like, some of the best memories for me and what I live for, really.
Sure.
Yeah.
How are you at 7? I feel like, I mean, I've been exposed to you very confident, knowing what you want. And I think the words I use, that you're focused. How were you at 7? Were you shy? Were you out there? Were you the person leading the pack when you guys are playing games? Because you're the natural leader in that circle.
I was a combination, yes. And I was like, I was reserved, but I was a very determined, like, child. I don't know where I got it from. I loved being by myself, but there would be moments like when my mom would get calls from school because I had, like, told people to get off the jungle gym and there was some plan that we were working on and none was allowed to be on the jungle gym and none of the kids could play and now my mom has to come to school. So I was a shy kid, but I was also, like, very determined and I think also maybe a little overbearing, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a lot.
You're a lot.
I was a lot at 7.
I love that. I think for me, I always say, like, it's like, you know, you see those traits of someone from the young age. Some people were shy or some people were out there. I know that I was out there. I was the teacher. Everyone had to listen to me teach. Oh, I can't believe. And it was mostly boys because my student only had boys. So I used to, like, teach them things. And I'm still that person who wants to be in, like, you know, yeah.
Organizing and driving.
Yes.
Yeah, I get that.
That's been consistent. What did you want to do growing up?
I wanted to be a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah. That was me. I wanted to be you. I wanted to be you. That was my dream growing up. Honestly, since I was like this big until probably high school when I fell in love with economics, that's all I wanted to do was be a lawyer. And I don't know where or how it like fell off.
Yeah.
But it did at some point in time. And I was like, maybe not for me. Yeah.
So and what got you to saying that I want to do economics? What was your career progression? How did you get into your current role? And what you're doing right now? But from this is what I'm studying and this is where I'm going. Because, I mean, we have access to certain roles and positions. Not everyone in high school sits there and says, I want to be, I don't know, study economics. You know, you'll say, I want to study BCom, financial management or something, or accounting science. That's because that's what we know.
Yeah.
So how did you get to what you're studying now and how has your career progression been?
Hmm. So, you know, like in grade 9 when you have to pick subjects and all of that. I loved, what was it called? EMS. Was it called EMS?
Yeah.
I loved EMS.
Yes.
But my mom was like very big on like science and maths, of course. Like it gives you more options and whatever. So I took maths and science, but I was very clear that like I'm going to take business studies and I'm going to take, and like people looked down on business studies. I don't know why, but they did.
Yeah.
So I took business studies and I took economics. And I fell in love, like, from grade 10 up until now. It's still, like, one of my first loves.
Sure.
I loved the way that it helped me make sense of the world. And I think it gave me a lens through which to, like, explain a lot of the things that I couldn't explain as a child. Like, why are certain people poor? Like, why it didn't make sense to me as a child that, like, other people had so much, still doesn't as an adult. Other people had so much, but so many people have like nothing.
Mm.
And so when I discovered this thing that explained like how we got to where we are, it blew my mind.
Sure.
So I took economics from grade 10 up until matric, obviously, and I did really well because I loved it. And then when it came to like first applying for universities and stuff, I really wanted to go to Tux.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to go to Tux.
Sure, because that's very interesting.
But at the time they had one of the best economics programs in the country.
Yeah, makes sense. So.
And so I was like, that's where I want to go. And my mom was like, I'm not sure about that. So I was like, okay, fine. I'll apply to a school closer to home. I'm not doing NMMU because I don't want to be just down the road. Mm. So I applied to Rhodes and I applied to Tux. I only applied to 2 schools. I don't know what trust I had in myself. but I got into Tux and I got like a partial scholarship for Tux. But my mom hid my acceptance letter.
Wow. Sure.
So I didn't know that I got into Tux. Then the letter from Rhodes came. And naturally, I was panicked. So I was like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah,
let's do this. Let's, what? There was some minimum payment that
yes.
we had to
oh.
scramble
MIP.
To get.
MIP.
Thousands. It's ridiculous. Scramble
it
to
get. It was
half
of your tuition and your race fee. So that's like.
It's insane.
It's like 40 grand.
It's like 40,000 rand.
At the beginning of the year.
From where?
Like.
From where? Anyway. So as usual, my mom made a plan. And I got in, and then obviously, then eventually she told me, oh, Tux, by the way. And I was like, well, it's too late now.
Yeah.
You know? Got into Rhodes, but honestly, going to Rhodes was probably one of the best God moments of my life.
Same. Yeah.
And God intervening in a way that I didn't like expect that worked out so beautifully because Rhodes kind of broadened my perspective and the understanding of economics beyond just the maths of it. To more kind of understanding the social design component of it, which I think is like so underappreciated, but I could go into a complete rant about that. So yeah, and then I studied a Bachelor of Economics at Rhodes. I did it all the way up into my honors. And then I, at that point in time, like I started thinking about work, what do I want to do, blah, 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 blah. And that was kind of the first bit of it. That's how I became a baby economist, eventually worked and then did my master's, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
And then now, what are you doing?
Now I am the chief of staff to the group CEO of one of the, and he's also like one of the founders of one of the most successful financial services.
LinkedIn, entities. Guys. That's all I'm saying.
In SA.
Yeah.
And I'm still new at it. It's not even a year. But it's been a really cool challenge. I've enjoyed it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm excited for you. And I saw it. I even like took a guy's. Listen, we are just Instagram friends. I was celebrating as if she was my friend. I took a screen grab of her announcement on LinkedIn and I DM'd her about, oh my goodness, this. And that's why she's probably thinking, why is this girl doing this? We are not friends.
No, yeah. I thought it was like, this is so sweet. Yeah,
I love celebrating people and just, I was so excited to see that. So I'm really excited to see what happens with your career, and I knew that you were the right person for this conversation, because the fact that you've navigated still being you and being authentically you, because you know sometimes in corporate you need to assimilate to what is being done, and the fact that you've remained you but you are like, you know, progressing, and I think that's such an important conversation, because usually when black girls are vocal and loud they end up leaving, you know, or you know, it becomes so hard to work in that space, and then you leave, you're forced to leave, but like you've remained, but you're still you. And I think for me, as someone who's been in that space, I'm like, how? Because I've been there, and it was not, you sort of have to, it's tough, you know. So I'm really excited to talk about that. But I think maybe just before we get into that, I wanted to go back to, how was your experience as a young professional entering corporate? If you, let's just say there's this black girl entering corporate, what are the three tips you would give them? So we can start with your experience and then we can move into your tips.
I think before I even get into the tips, I think it's really important for me to also acknowledge the ways that I've been privileged, in ways that I think a lot of young black people in general, but I think especially young black women, don't have access to those things. So the schools we went to conditioned us to be able to hold a conversation and navigate like certain small social cues that I think if you're not exposed to that, it makes it that much harder. So I do want to acknowledge that, because I think any tips or guidance or my experience would have been shaped or facilitated by some of that. And I think it's important for me to acknowledge that upfront. And so my experience entering corporate, as a young professional was, I was so excited, you know, and I think being excited is good. And I was excited to make an impact. I was excited to learn. But I think very quickly when you enter the space, you realize like, oh, I think like in my cohort, there were two black girls out of a cohort of maybe 15 in the graduate program at that firm at the time. And it was difficult, because I am somebody who questions. Okay, well, why is everybody in leadership white and male, you know? And I think it's important for me to ask those questions. It was quite important for me, because if nobody who's above me looks like me, you know, what's the likelihood of me making it to that?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that. And I think there's also a lot of internalizing, making myself smaller very early on. And, you know, seeing the differences in how white male counterparts in particular were able to navigate quite freely, because they could play golf, they all hung out in the same places. So the kind of culture and experience for them was a lot easier. It's easier to connect to people who look like you, who, you know, you can talk about the same things, about the weekend and how you grew up and all of that stuff. So I think that was the initial kind of difficulty for me, is that the social aspect of a career is really important. And I think a lot of young black professionals are, and that's one of the tips, are tricked into believing that hard work is the only thing that's going to get you there. It's not. if you're not plugged into the social and political cues of the space, sitting in your corner and working hard and delivering is not going to cut it. And that's unfortunate, but that's just the reality. So I learned that quite quickly, that I needed to socialize, I needed to engage with people. But the first while was really difficult because I wanted to do it like other people, and then I figured like it's not sustainable for me. And so I just chose to do it like me, you know, being honest about my experience, being honest about how I grew up and the challenges of growing up, and how we needed to rethink how we recruit. If you're recruiting from all of these universities, of course you're going to attract the same type of people, including me. Like you're going to attract the same type
of black
person. Yeah. And that feeds into a culture that's not healthy for people who fall outside of that. And so it was really, really difficult. But again, I always say, like, I don't know, I think God always, in situations, because I there's nothing else that I can use to explain it because it wasn't me, hand picks me for some reason to just use my meanness to try and drive change. So it was hard, but I liked the fight.
Fight. Yeah.
But I think it is okay to run away. And it's not running away to choose yourself, because there were moments where you take the fight to a point and you're like, this is as far as I can go here. And I'm not willing to kind of extend myself any further. So I think the learning that balance is something I've learned later on in my career. But that was my experience as kind of a young black professional entering the space, is how lonely it can feel. How you can choose to fight, or you can choose to just say, this is my check and I gotta go. I just never had that view, because I knew it wouldn't be true to me. And so I couldn't take that stance of, I'm just here to work and take my check. And then, because work takes such a big part of your life, especially when you're young, right? Because you want to prove yourself, you're pushing the hours, and it made no sense for me to like just be okay with a space that didn't allow me to be myself.
Sure.
Yeah.
Allow you. That's actually deep, because like being in a space that allows you to be you is when, like, for instance, we work hard to create a healthy work environment. Mm. And that's like, we're intentional about that. And then I think walking into that space, I'm like, okay, you're excited to walk into that space, you know, versus when you can't be you in a space, you know, it becomes draining. Then you're there and you're sitting and you're anxious all the time. You're like, oh, it's Monday tomorrow. Oh my goodness. You know,
or you feel like someone's going to catch you out.
Yes. You know,
that you're pretending.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You're always on edge. And I mean, it's 8 hours of your life every day.
Yeah.
If that. For most of us, some it was 12.
Yeah, they wanted to say it was like more hours, exactly. Weekends sometimes. Exactly. You walk in there and then there's another like partner or someone who's more senior in the office. So again, you're reminded of the, you know, it's not just like weekdays, but also weekends are a reminder of the space, you know. So that's also another thing. But I wanted to go back to for the tips. So you spoke about the social spaces. What is the second and third one you would give to someone, this young black girl entering the space?
So hard work is important, but it's not the only thing.
Yeah.
The second thing that I think is really underappreciated is your support circle. Find other young black women, and we don't all have to be best friends, okay? We just have to respect each other's hustle. Find those people that you can, that will make you not feel crazy. Even if, whether it's at work or outside of work in your friendship circle, whatever. Like, be intentional about building a circle of young women, black women, who can speak into you. And who can... Because sometimes maybe you are being crazy, right?
Yeah.
But you can't trust people who don't have your experience to tell you you're not being crazy, because you've lived long enough to know sometimes when you're feeling crazy, you're not being crazy. Yeah. So you need that circle. That has helped me a lot. And I think the further I go into my career, the more critical that circle of people is, to be like, this thing happened. Like, what do you think about it? Because it bothered me. And then people will be like, actually, it's not, you know, it's not that deep. Or maybe this is what they meant. Or this is how you should think about approaching it, because it's happened to me. That circle is really important. And then I think the third thing is about be intentional and take ownership of your career. Every single workspace, most workspaces, let me say, will have some kind of progression plan, right? What are they called? Half-year reviews, quarterly reviews, or whatever. But no one's going to hold your hand, right? And you can also compel people to have conversations with you before you get to that mark. So that's what I would do. It'd be like every time I was working with a manager, especially a manager that I admired, I'd be like, okay, we've just wrapped up this piece of work. Can we talk about it? Can we like debrief? What went well? What do you think? Because those types of things show kind of keenness and excitement to learn. But it also reinforces to you like what going into the next thing you need to kind of work on and focus on. And you don't feel like you're chasing your own tail, because by the time you get to that scorecard or sheet where they're giving you three or whatever they're doing, you have a plan. You are clear about the areas of development for yourself and have a folder. I've said this on my Instagram and people thought I was crazy. Have a folder where if someone is sending you an email that says, well done, you download that email, PDF it, you save it in your career folder. If there's a Teams message, you screenshot, you put it, because people forget.
Yeah.
People forget. And it's not always malicious or whatever, but you might even forget, Ayanda, that, you know, but I've done this before. And if you look through, like when I was looking for work and I was looking through this portfolio, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe some of the things that I've done.
Yeah.
And that also rebuilds your confidence, but it also makes it easier when you are going to have the conversation to say, this is my body of work. And this is what people have said about me. This is what you said about me.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why are you giving me one now, bro? It doesn't make any sense.
Like every correspondent here is saying, great work.
Yeah, receipts. Receipts are not just about social media, guys. Yeah. Like,
that's so good.
Build that folder. It's important.
I love that. That's so good. Yeah. I've never even thought about that, about having a folder. Because sometimes, you know, people might take one experience and make that your entire experience. And you want to remind them, yes, maybe I fumbled this, which is like 5% of my 95%. Exactly. This is the 95%. Let's not forget that. Because people are so quick to focus on the bad.
Yeah.
And all the experiences that they weren't happy about. Yeah. So I think maybe just going back to now you've entered corporate, now you're working, what are some of those hurdles that you experienced and had to persist through those experiences, like as a young professional?
It's, you know what, when I was reflecting on some of these questions, I was like, a lot of this stuff has to do with, some of it was purely the system, because I think the system it's not designed or to necessarily facilitate the healthiest, let me say that, progression. And I think one of the major obstacles that I've gone through was a severe burnout. So 2017, I was severely burnt out, so burnt out that I ended up in hospital. And it was because the culture in the spaces that I was working at was so outputs driven at the cost of self.
Sure.
And I think my natural personality type is very type A, very ambitious, very... So once I get onto that wheel, it's very difficult for me to get off. And so constantly feeling like I had to prove myself, constantly feeling... you know, undermined, questioned, maligned, got me into that spiral. And I think coming out of that, doing the work to find a healthier balance, because I'm always going to be the person who wants to do more. But I think the question that I had to, and continue to like have to ask myself is, at what cost? And sacrificing friendships, sacrificing family, sacrificing personal time for this thing. And like, what is the thing, right? So I think that was one of the major hurdles for me. And also kind of learning how to advocate for myself in a way that didn't feel combative.
Sure.
Was challenging. Mm. And I think generally the world perceives any kind of confrontation from Black women as like aggressive.
Yeah.
And so figuring that out and navigating that without also like placating and being nice girl, like, because so what if I'm not nice? I did the job. Reward me accordingly.
Yeah.
But that's not how things work in corporate. So I think those two are probably the two major ones that I'll probably continue to run into.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like one big point. It's just a pattern that I've observed and experienced throughout my career.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think maybe just going back to we're talking about the experiences. What would you say are some of the barriers that corporate Black professional experience in the workplace? And I think this is also leading to the next question of why they are leaving. Talented, brilliant Black professionals are leaving.
Should ask the ones who've left, child. I'm still in it.
I mean, I tell you why I am.
Drag them, tell them.
And how can we, I think even going so and saying, so we're speaking about barriers, we're speaking about leaving, and then saying, how can we retain them? Because we're not saying it's a bad space, particularly if you want to grow in your career, but what are smarter ways also we can retain them, you know, as a Black professional? If things were done differently for you, maybe this is why some would have stayed. So I think, you know, it's three questions in one.
Sure.
But they all flow into each other.
Sure. Ooh, The barriers to success for Black people in corporate is that I think the uncomfortable conversation that people don't want to have about corporate spaces is that they were designed at a time and built at a time, many of these corporations, where Black people were not in decision-making positions, right? The systems were built at that time. And a lot of the people who came up in those spaces at that time are still in charge, right? So there's a big component of that is socialization, right? And people write policies. Policies don't grow out of the ground and you pick, you know, a transformation policy out of the ground. They're written by people. And if the people who are in charge are not exposed to the realities and the challenges of Black people, and if the Black people who are on the inside, and especially if you're, once you start to get to kind of middle management, senior management, are not having those conversations, how's the policy going to change?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think for me, it's by design. And it's a reflection of what the world is. Mm. And there's a story that at a point when I started kind of getting into management positions, in my previous life, and we were having conversations about one of the juniors on the team. And the conversation was like, this person's not dedicated, you know, Black person. This person's not dedicated, you know, they don't put in the hours. They're always leaving before the rest of the team. And I was like, she doesn't have a car.
Yeah.
She has to go and get a taxi to get back home.
Yeah.
Before it's dark. She can't be at the office until 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. Because home is on the other side of Johannesburg for her. But if that has never been your experience, you don't think about that, right? And so I know it's hard and I can appreciate that it's difficult, but I do think there's a dual responsibility, right? There's the responsibility of, you know, white leaders to come to the party and white people in general to come to the party. But there's also responsibility on us as Black people to communicate and vocalize and be advocates and for people who are not Black to be allies to the Black cause.
Yes. Right? Yeah, it's so important, guys.
Yeah.
That is like, if you want to know what role you can play being an ally.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's important. And it's not about taking on the cause on for yourself, but it's about like just questioning. And people don't question that because a lot of the people who are in those spaces haven't had those experiences, or they've lived the middle class life for so long that they can't think of that. And so the fact that somebody doesn't articulate themselves with a, in a particular way doesn't mean their ideas are not valid. Mm. So the barriers are bigger than just saying, you know, we don't want black people in this. It's not that, like, you know, overt.
Yeah.
But it's the socialization is so deeply entrenched. And it's part of the reason why I was saying to you, like, at one of my first jobs, I was like, we can't keep recruiting from these universities.
Yeah.
Because you're not recruiting from the historically black universities. And that says something, right? That means something. And it just creates spaces where, like, that's why we leave.
Hmm.
Like, you get tired. It's exhausting. Because I actually just want to do my job without having to question whether you're questioning me because I'm black and a woman, or whether it's really about the work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that I think is one of the reasons why a lot of us leave, or like we just kind of fall into this like phase of being okay with just going on just to get along because I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and I think sometimes I'm finding that a lot of my friends that have left, it's not even a matter of like yes, the work environment. But I think when you looked at your parents where they've had to go to jobs every morning that they probably really hate, now you're like, actually, that doesn't have to be my reality. I can choose where I want to be because I've been afforded this education. I can maybe try go to new spaces. Actually choose me. And I think a lot of black professionals are also getting to that stage to be like, I'm actually not going to put up with this. Miss me with this. And I'm not saying that not everyone has that privilege. It's another thing that I wanted to say. It's not like something that's available because it's also resources.
Bills to pay. Families to take care of.
Exactly. So it's not even one that's available for a lot of people. Yeah. It's probably a fraction that can live with that. Actually, I don't need this energy in my life. Mm. I choose me.
I gotta go. That's another tip. Start saving.
Yeah.
For, I know we don't swear on this podcast, so I'm not, but for an if you fund. It's very important. It's a free yourself fund.
Free yourself.
As soon as you can.
I love that. Free yourself fund.
But also, not everyone's going to be an entrepreneur. Yeah. And we need to be honest about that. Highly unlikely that I'll ever be an entrepreneur. Highly unlikely. Like, maybe, you know, I don't know what God has in store for me. But, like, we don't all have to be entrepreneurs, guys. I also want to say that. Please, don't edit that out.
No, I won't. It's true. And I think that's why we have different people from all walks of lives. We have creatives, you know, creative entrepreneurs. We have your tech entrepreneurs, we have corporate, you know, people are different, you know. You'll find that actually you might just be the next CEO of some tech startup, and you know, but not you being like the entrepreneur, but you being in a startup space. I actually would see that would be cool, you know, like, or COO of like some tech startup.
Maybe.
You know?
It seems like God is pushing me in that direction really? Right now.
Listen, God professing. Look at me, just speaking into existence. You know, the tech space is amazing. Yeah. I'm in the tech space. 100%. I'm like an advocate for being in that 100%. Space. Obviously, you have to work at making sure that it's an inclusive space because it is male-dominated. Mm-hmm. And also, when agri, so also white-dominated. Yeah. So you have to work very hard to make it inclusive. To a point where we have an inclusive committee, guys.
It's important.
Yeah.
This is the thing, right? People think, like, transformed, involved, happy, healthy companies happen by accident. They don't. It's a lot of thinking work because you also have blind spots and somebody will say to you, but Ayanda, what about this?
Yeah.
You didn't think of, and you won't think about it because it's not your experience.
Exactly.
So it's really like the intentionality about it is so important. And even me, like with all of the gifts that I think and the doors that God is opening for me, I'm so clear that it's such a huge responsibility. And I have to be aware. Mm. I have a responsibility to be aware and to be plugged in. So that I can see there's a talented black girl here. Like, pull her into the meetings.
Exactly.
Pull her into the conversations that she probably would never get exposure to.
Yeah.
Have the coffee. Like,
yeah. Collaboration, guys.
It doesn't hurt. It takes nothing away from you.
It really doesn't.
But
I think we need to stop being okay with being the only black girl in the room.
Girl.
That is way...
Let me tell you something. I hate it.
Yeah.
It's so lonely. Because sometimes, you know, there's some, you'll sit in an executive meeting and you're like,
yeah, no.
I'm not make eye contact with. I want to give somebody the look to say, girl, did this person just say that? It's we need more. We do.
Yeah, and we need to pull each other.
100%.
And it's a matter of, like, we need to start making those spaces open, knowing, because, I mean, they're not opening up for everyone. So 100%. We need to be intentional about opening those spaces.
Yeah, 100%.
Not everyone has to go through your same journey. It's like paying it forward, man. Yeah. If you went through all of that, it's very, you learned a lot. Take those lessons and say, you know what, navigate like this. You know, actually, don't write that in your email. It's not going to help you write this. Because that's how you will also help in more Black women feeling like they do have, not even allies, but feeling that you have that community within that space. Because sometimes I feel like it'd be competition amongst us.
Yeah.
That whole thing that we need to be, stop being okay being the only Black girls. Because you want to be the only one or be the one.
The first.
We need to stop that, but rather to say, how can we get more in the room? How can we help each other to be in the room? Because one voice is not enough. You need multiple voices in that space. And also opportunities for that person, you know, because we all know, as you were saying, hard work is not the only way to progress in this space. So
Good luck if that's your strategy. That's all I'm going to say. Good luck.
I wanted to chat about you growing your career. What are some of the things you wish someone had told you about progressing in corporate? What tips would you provide for someone looking to progress in their career?
I wish I had taken the role of a sponsor more seriously. And, like, this is one of my personal, like, pet peeves. Like, I think women in general are over-mentored under sponsored.
Yes.
I don't need another sponsor. No offense. Like, I mean, another mentor. I need sponsors. I need people who are going to speak for me, advocate for me in the rooms that I cannot gain access to. And I think for me, it happened accidentally. And had I known, I think I would have been a lot more deliberate a lot sooner about identifying people in the spaces who could act as sponsors for me. And take being taken as somebody's, I don't want to say pet project, but as somebody's, like, somebody's identified you as someone they want to advocate for, take it seriously. Because they're putting their name on the line for you. And your name goes a really long way. If you're building a career, it's one thing to have a job. It's a different thing to build a career, right? My name is everything to me. My credentials matter, great. They're important, what I've studied, blah, blah, blah. But my name, I want to know that if I say, oh, Ayanda is excellent, that's, I'm putting a gamble on my name.
Yeah.
If I'm saying, let her into the room, like, she's going to be incredible. That's my name. And if you get into that room and you destroy it, that's a mark against my name. It's not just about you, right? And I think I wish I had taken that seriously a lot sooner. I think it would have facilitated, it would have made some things a lot easier. I think I wouldn't have had to deal with a lot of the stuff that I've dealt with. And your sponsors don't always have to be Black women. I think Black women are in this country, the successful ones, are overburdened with people saying, please, please help me. And I get it, but it doesn't have to be somebody who looks like you.
Yeah. I've heard that too, that it can't be someone who doesn't look like, who's probably like on the other side.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't have to be someone like that. I've heard that.
Yeah.
And it was actually an older lady who was in corporate, and she was speaking about that they don't have to, because she was saying all my sponsors were white males.
Same. Yeah. All of them. Every single one of my sponsors has been a white man.
Sure.
And that's why I'm saying it's about being intentional, because those guys were saying, okay, you're talking about this, like, there's no Black people. Okay, cool. Let me work with you then. But not just work with you to say, this is how you speak in a meeting, this is how you present. Like, come on, please. It's like, there's a massive project here that's going to get you FaceTime with important people, that's going to accelerate your capabilities quickly.
Sure.
I want you on my project. I'm going to get you on that project. It's about that person who's going to have the conversation when people are being planned to say, well, Lizzie, we should be on that project. And then me saying, I can't let X down. I can't let Y down. Like, how would Y do this? And then Y connecting me to people. Because those people are the connectors. Mm. And I think I've been able to do the things that I've done. I mean, even yesterday, I was having a coffee with my former boss.
Mm.
And it, those relationships matter because, like I said, I am my career is my business. Mm. So I don't have, if things don't work out where I'm at here, I can go back and say, hey, like, let's reach out. What are you doing? Like, what's so-and-so doing? And sponsorships, actually, that's another really, if you take nothing else away from this.
Yeah.
Take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the conversation around sponsorship is not accessible. I didn't even know it was a thing until like 2 years ago.
Mm.
And I was already out of corporate.
Because it's all about mentoring, right?
Yeah, it's all about mentor. Find a mentor, sit down with someone, chat, you know. Then I heard about, and I know in some instances, some people even pay sponsors because of how important they are. You know, one guest I once had, she's like, you know, in Nigeria, people pay me to be a mentor because I've never heard of that. But I think sponsors are so important, and I keep hearing more and more, especially for young professionals in corporate, like, do not underestimate having a sponsor. If you don't know, research, find out more. But that's something that I've learned to know, that it's something that is very important. And as I said, I only found out once I was out that there was a thing called a sponsor, and the difference between a sponsor and a mentor. But I want to speak about this. How did you find your voice in the workplace or in corporate? What was that process? I think, as I said, like, you're still you, and you still have your values. You still have your views about different things, and you're still excelling. You know, usually you have to suppress the one bit to make sure you grow, because you don't want to offend anyone. Because if you offend people, it might hamper how you grow in corporate. So how did you remain being authentically you and not having to take up cycling? Because everyone's taking up cycling. You know, because now you need to be with those people.
Don't make me laugh, because I was talking about hobbies just the other day, and I was like, to my husband, I was like, maybe I should start playing squash or something. Like, my hobbies are so, like, solitary anyway. That's hilarious. I think it would be dishonest of me to say that there weren't parts of me that I still feel like I do need to suppress. It would be a lie. Because I have to be strategic.
Yeah.
And I think that there's an element of being strategic in how I use my voice. Mm. I can't just, you know, shoot from the hip and say whatever I want or whatever is. Being tactful, I guess, is really important. And also, I value earning my stripes in a space. And I know this is going to be, might be contentious, but getting people's respect for what I was brought into the space to do first, before I started, you know, kind of articulating, and because it's easier that way, right? I can do this. I've proven I can do this. I'm really good at it. But now let's talk about the other things, you know? Let's have conversations about other things. I don't want to pretend to cycle if all I do is, like, sit in my house and go do champagne brunch with my friends. That's what I do.
Yeah.
All I do is champagne brunch. That's what I do on weekends. And I don't want to pretend to not be that person, but I also know that there's value in, like, earning, like I said, earning my stripes first. And also, it's okay to leave.
Yeah, that's true.
If you've tried to vocalize yourself and, like, be who you are in a space and it's not welcomed, it's really okay to leave.
Yeah.
And I think finding your voices around, finding small, safe spaces, and it's around building that circle around yourself in that space and testing your ideas with people that you trust. Having people you trust in the space you work at is critical, just for your mental health in general, but also for testing out your ideas, because you could think you have the best thoughts and, like, your politics are the best in the world, and then you actually talk to people and they're like, no, I don't think that's right, friend. Like, yeah. You need to rethink that. And as you gradually do that, you can then extend it beyond that circle. But I think for me, it's been around being deliberate about building that safe space for myself everywhere I go to work. And then also being strategic. Mm. Like, I'm so sorry. You can be who you are if you own the business. I don't own the businesses I work for.
Yeah.
And so it's about holding on to as much of myself as possible without compromising kind of the essence of who I am. Mm. But also having an appreciation of, like, this is work, Simpson and Zina up.
Yeah, you know?
So I can be honest and vocalize my thoughts, but be strategic. That's the most honest answer I can give.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate that, because now people are seeing this, thinking, how can I be me and find my voice in this space? And I mean, that you've gone through the journey, and people will take from this and say, okay, this is what I can apply. So I do appreciate that honesty.
Mm.
But in closing, so we're going to close with this question. And I think I think sometimes you do feel lost in your journey or in your career, where you're like, I'm just moving, I'm just floating. And someone said, one day I feel like I'm going to be an accidental judge. I just found myself here floating. What advice would you give to someone that's feeling lost in their career or feeling lost in corporate?
I think it happens to most people. That's what I would want to say. I've been through that last year. But I also think we need to do a lot of work to not outsource the responsibility of managing our careers.
I love that.
And I think when you are in a season of feeling lost or feeling dissatisfied, it's really about, like, okay, I've still got bills to pay, so I still need to go to work, but how can I use my time to figure out what else is out there? And that's what I went through last year, where I was like, I'm getting to the point of, I'm going to lock myself in with this good money, but I don't think this is what I want to do. So I need to move. And then that's when all of the stuff that we spoke about today, the networks, speaking to my friends, reaching out to my acquaintances, having conversations with people, having conversations with my sponsors, having conversations with my mentors, to say, this is how I'm feeling, but I don't know what to do next. And then looking at what is out there, what exists, what is possible. And also just being kind to yourself.
Man. Yeah.
I think so social media makes it so difficult, because we're all winning on social media.
Yeah.
But own race, own pace.
Yeah.
And don't outsource the responsibility of managing your career. It's not HR's responsibility. It's not talent's responsibility. It's yours. So take the time, invest, build your circle. Your networks will be your life, your lifeline.
I love that. Oh, guys, I think that's take ownership of your career. And we all at some point do feel lost in some stage. And I think that's knowing, being kind to yourself and going on that journey with, not with just with yourself, but with other people around you, but be kind to yourself. I think that's so important. So we're at the end of our conversation. Actually, when I looked up, so I was like, they were like 45 minutes. I'm like, oh my goodness, it's been 45 minutes.
I can't believe
it. I've been waiting for the 30 minutes thing. So I've been going and thinking this conversation, I'm like, it's been 45 minutes. So thank you so much for sharing your insight. And I really do hope that anyone that's out there, black girl, black boy, young professional, that you really take this in, and this will bless you, and you'll use this and you'll grow. Next thing, we are hearing more chief of staff to the group CEO of some major institution. So thank you for your time and just sharing your insights and your journey with us.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I loved it. Yay! Thank you.
I hope you were equipped and elevated by today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you loved what you heard, please share with others and post about on social media. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram, Ayanda_Vanna, and on Twitter, Ayanda Vanna. See you in the next episode.